It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, here we go. Hour number 2 of the Drive underway. Top 4 at 4 this afternoon presented by David Brent and his team at Volunteer State Insurance Brokers. Check out volunteerstateinsurance.com or call David at 865-224-3243. We begin with news from the National Football League. Black is back for the Atlanta Falcons. The team announcing Wednesday its new uniforms for the 2020 season, marking the first redesign in 17 years. New Falcons home uniform will feature black jerseys, black pants, while the away look will be white on white. There will be up to 8 uniform combinations, including a throwback version of the 1966 team and a, quote, rise up alternate uniform. Bear, Trey, I'm sure you guys have seen the new Falcons uniforms online today. What do you think?
Garbage, man. I thought I'd go back to the original.
Trey?
You were kind of breaking up there on my end, buddy. I'm sorry. I didn't grab the whole question. Sorry.
New Falcons uniforms. Your thoughts?
They kind of, I don't know, they look kind of edgy, I guess you could say, but they also kind of look like the old Buccaneers. I mean, the newer version of the Buccaneers in the last 2 years, just different colors. I don't know. It's a uniform, man. The more we get down the line, the more these things are going to start looking like the XFL.
I like the throwback, but my only issue with the main one is they have the ATL across the chest, and I just feel like only MAC teams and OVC teams should have their names written across the front of the jersey on the football uniforms. I just feel like that's such a high school hairy branding thing to do. I don't know. Maybe that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. Number 2, staying in the NFL, Tom Brady said he went into the 2019 season thinking it would be his final year with the Patriots and delved into his relationship with Coach Bill Belichick in an expansive 2-hour interview today on Howard Stern's radio show. I was listening to this a little bit earlier. No, it's interesting, guys. It's a great interview so far, and I think Howard Stern actually has a bit of an advantage here because he's not a big sports guy. He doesn't know anything about football, and he says that several times. So he's like, first of all, he's just a great interviewer anyway, but I actually think his lack of sports knowledge, like, I don't want to hear Brady, like, talking about, you know, really in-depth inside baseball stuff about his career at the Patriots. I want to hear about his life. I want to hear what he's like off the field and his life with Giselle and their kids and all that stuff. And Howard does a nice job of capturing that. I've only listened to about half of it on – I found a YouTube link earlier today. But pretty interesting stuff. Are you guys buying that the Brady-Belichick relationship is strong?
No. I don't think it is at all.
I think it's something where they both had to make a decision on what they thought was best for the team and the direction they were going. The Patriots have to figure out who their starting quarterback is going to be for the next 10 years, and Tom Brady's not going to be playing football, you know, 10 years from now, probably. So, I mean, it sounds like they had some upfront conversations. So, you know, I don't know. It's hard to – they both don't give away a lot.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. But I think, you know, in 15, 20 years, yeah, we'll probably find something out about that.
Another thing about that interview, Brady curses a lot, man. He's got kind of a potty mouth.
Yes.
And I know he's on with.
Seen the videos of him on the sidelines?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Peyton curses a lot on the sideline, on the field, but he never curses in the media or in interviews or in public, right?
No.
I just found that interesting.
Yeah. But Peyton's, I've heard and, like, actually heard back in the day. Peyton's got a pretty foul mouth.
Like, hey, you know,
the rest
guy,
of us that went to school here.
Newsflash, football guys curse. Number three, speaking of Brady, the guy he replaces, Jameis Winston, was on Fox News today for some reason. And he says that it's an honor to be replaced by the greatest quarterback of all time. Quote, one thing you learn about me is my faith. I have tremendous faith in my Lord. And one thing about Tom Brady is it's understood that he is the GOAT. For you to get replaced by Tom Brady in a city that you love so much, I guess that's kudos to me. That statement means absolutely nothing. That makes absolutely no sense, what he just said.
No, I mean, I guess consider the source.
Yeah, what a strange collection of words. Maybe you should enter the presidential race. Number four, following a controversial tweet by Mike Leach, Mississippi State Athletic Director John Cohen issued a statement yesterday saying there is a plan in place to provide the first-year Bulldogs coach with opportunities to, quote, expand his cultural awareness of Mississippi. Leach's tweet depicting a woman knitting a noose for her husband during self-quarantine was criticized by several Bulldogs players. Defensive lineman Fabian Lovett entered the transfer portal, and his father told the Clarion Ledger in Mississippi that he didn't feel comfortable with his son playing for Leach. Athletics director said, no matter the context, for many Americans, the image of a noose is never appropriate, and that's particularly true in the South. In Mississippi, Mississippi State University was disappointed in the use of such an image in a tweet by Coach Mike Leach. So Cohen adds that Leach will participate in, quote, listening sessions with students, alumni, and community groups, and will take guided visits to the Museum of Mississippi History and the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum once it is allowed. What do you guys think about Mike Leach falling on the sword at the altar of political correctness? The pirate is going to subject himself to listening tours and is going to go visit these museums with community leaders. Wouldn't you like
to be a... I hope they stream it live on Periscope or something.
That would be hysterical, man.
He's a history buff. We know that. I don't know. That's just, you know... It just seems like you did something really stupid.
Here's my thing. I don't even think it was that stupid, because I know we're in 2020 and context doesn't matter anymore. But it matters to me, and I think it matters to most intelligent people. And Mike Leach, regardless of what you think about him as a football coach or a character or whatever, like, there's no denying the man has a law degree from Pepperdine, right? I mean, he's a smart guy. He's very well read. He's not a meathead football coach. He knows all about institutional racism in the South and Jim Crow and slavery and lynchings and all that. So, like, he doesn't need to be taught that, right? He had absolutely no intention of drawing any sort of parallel or connection to any of that stuff when he tweeted out his funny little meme, his funny little joke. Everybody had a laugh about it. But you know what? It's 2020. Somebody pretended to be offended. And what did he do? He apologized for it, right? He went on and said, yeah, I apologize to anybody that my tweet may have offended. I took it down and I apologized to it. What's wrong at that point with the athletics director saying he's apologized, we accept his apology, we're moving on? Like, why do we have to just kowtow? Nobody was offended over this. Nobody. Like, player's going to transfer, whatever, you know, there's a coaching change. Player's going to transfer anyway. Like, I don't think anybody is really, like, quaking in their boots, absolutely just cut to the quick over Mike Leach's meme that he tweeted out a couple of... What are we doing here in college football?
I'll tell you this, Russ. It makes pretty damn good sense that player Lovett, that his father would give that little brief interview with the Clarion Ledger and say that, because I promise you he's going to use that when it comes to trying to get immediately eligible come this fall.
That's a great point. And he might be Tennessee's one of the schools he's talking to. And I hope he does use it because it benefits us, but it's disingenuous at best. Like, I don't think that he's leaving because of Coach Leach's tweet. No. I mean, that might be a convenient excuse to use for a quest for initial immediate eligibility. But I'm skeptical as to that is the sole reason that he's leaving Mississippi State.
I agree completely. I thought it was. I mean, he entered the portal a day after the tweet went out, pretty much. So I mean, and what people don't know also, it takes 24 to 48 hours to even get your name into the portal. So he was already leaving before the tweet was sent. Like, if people would look into this stuff, they'd realize these things. So whatever. If his dad wants to go down that road, that's cool, and that's his choice, but I'm not buying it.
I just hate seeing the pirate kneel before the altar of political correctness like this. I would have so much respect for him, and they might fire him, but you know what? He's 59 years old. He's already wealthy. He's had a great career. He's not going to win a championship at Mississippi State anyway. He knows that. I would have so much more respect for him if he had just said, you know what, I'm not having listening sessions, I'm not going to these museums with you. I might go to these museums independently of myself because I have a wide range of interests, and I have interest outside of football, but I'm not going to be lectured to by a bunch of virtue signaling social justice warriors who probably don't know as much about the history they're trying to teach me as I do already. So if you want to fire me, go ahead and fire me. But it's a joke. And I don't know if you've noticed, but people are dying all over the place, including African-Americans at a disproportionate number of this terrible disease that we've got going on right now. So why don't we take all the energy that we're pouring into this false non-controversy and pour it into an actual emergency and a problem and do something that actually matters? How about that?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm behind you 100%.
The only thing I think about it, Russ, is that I just thank God that that John Curry didn't hire him here. This is exactly the kind of crap that comes along with Mike Leach. He says dumb stuff.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, I'm glad our football coach is a meathead, and I don't mean that disparagingly. Like, that's what I want out of my football coach, is a guy who's just 110% football all the time. Like, what you might have to worry about Jeremy Pruitt making the wrong call on fourth down. I don't know, but I know that I do not have to worry about him ever stepping foot in one of these, just traps, one of these controversy traps.
No, he's not putting anything out like that. Do you seriously? I mean, Trey would probably know better than me and you. Do we seriously think that Jeremy Pruitt, does more than? I mean, how much do you think he actually does his Twitter? Or is that just some GA?
Yeah, that's not Jeremy Pruitt doing it. That's a social media GA that's handling all that. I promise you.
I mean, Russ, how would Jeremy Pruitt go about tweeting something?
Well, hey, T, can you get me one of them kids in here? I want to put out a tweet, all right? I want to put out something that the recruits are going to like, all right? Oh, yeah, Coach, we'll get that taken care of. You go back to whatever. What are you doing, watching film back there? You just keep doing that.
Go out there and put one of those on a mission tweets out, please.
He's watching cut films of the secondary from last year is what he's doing.
Let's go to the phones. Good afternoon, Phil. And I can only imagine, like, Pruitt's recruiting, like, if he's recruiting this kid right now, the one that's leaving Mississippi State And like Pruitt doesn't care, but he'll do anything to get the player, right? I understand you want to get out of there at Mississippi State. That was a real insensitive thing Coach Leach done. Couldn't believe he tweeted that out. I would never do something like that.
Hey, Zane,
what's up, Philly?
How y'all doing today?
Hey, man, we're doing all right. Thanks.
Well, speaking of recruiting, I understand that Blaine Bishop's son is going to be a preferred walk-on to him, so y'all had any information on it?
Really? That's pretty cool.
I hadn't heard that. Pretty cool, though.
Yeah. It's going to be a DB, so maybe a diamond in the rough.
If he's anything like his old man, he won't be a walk-on for long.
That's right.
Blaine Bishop laid the wood.
Let's go back to the way y'all started the show off with Eli Manning winning, throwing that pass to Tyree. Well, I think he had two quail ducks and two Super Bowls that beat Brady. He you know, just threw it up for grabs, and New York Giant receivers came down twice, and they won two championships for Peyton Manning. I mean, Tom Brady Brady would have eight championships right now.
I mean, if we're being honest, next to Terry Bradshaw, Eli Manning is probably the worst quarterback to ever win multiple Super Bowls, correct?
I have to think about that. I don't know. That's interesting.
It's an interesting question.
Research that. Well, he's not a horrible quarterback.
No, I mean, neither of them were horrible, but usually you look at teams that have won Super Bowls with several notable exceptions. Usually they've got just a fantastic quarterback pulling the trigger, right?
Yeah.
Either that or just an absolutely dominating, ferocious defense.
Well, yeah. I mean, and those are the Steelers, those Giants teams were pretty good. They really get after the passer. Obviously, Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson, quarterbacks that have won Super Bowls behind tremendous defenses.
Yeah.
I don't know, this old Steelers offense was, I mean, Bradshaw had two Hall of Famers he was throwing to.
Well, Steelers
had
talent.
Franco Harris and Rocky Blyer. Huh?
Steelers had talent. And that about offensively and defensively. I mean, they were a great program back then. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. They were. Like they were so talented on the defensive side and at the skill positions that they were able to overcome having a complete rube playing quarterback for him all those years.
I mean, you can call him a rube if you want, Russ.
You got four rings, W.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You guys are making a point for me.
I feel like you're taking a cheap shot at Terry Bradshaw. I'm not going to stand for it.
I got that in.
Kind of comical.
Well, it's talking about NC State, another topic y'all brought up. You know, I've fought NC State since I was a youngster, and back in the 70s, David Thompson was a highly recruited player who went to NC State. Do y'all know who David Thompson is?
Yeah, could make change. You put a dollar on the top of the backboard, he'd jump up and make change, right?
He's one of the greatest players that ever played, talent-wise, and he was Jordan for his time, but North Carolina State got him, and they had to have a year of probation because they got him. This all goes back, but the goal against North Carolina and Duke, you have to cheat because they're getting away with it and not getting any, you know, nothing being done to them.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree, and it's crazy to me that they're going to, you know, NC State's going to get slammed. They got caught with their hand in the cookie jar, but you can't tell me with the role that Zion Williamson played in the FBI investigation, and they've got the Kansas coach on tape talking about how much it would cost to have him play at Kansas. You can't tell me he turned around and went to Duke for free. It's the same thing as Cam Newton going to Auburn, and I guess Auburn got away with that, so why should we expect any different with Duke?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Will Wade and Buck Pearl, too, you know what?
Yeah, I mean, the Will Wade one's a little more cut and dry, I guess, because they've got him on tape talking about paying players. You know, I guess Bruce Pearl could kind of plead ignorance and say, oh, this is something Chuck Person was doing. I had no idea, which nobody believes that, but you know, you have to have evidence, right? So I'm stunned that Will Wade is still employed, quite frankly.
And LSU cares about winning, huh?
I guess so.
One more thing is, so you say Bernie Sanders has dropped out of the contest?
Yes, he has, Phil. I know that breaks your heart.
Well, I guess I'd wait 4 more years to legalize pot.
Was that part of Bernie's platform, Bear, was legalizing it?
I don't know. I don't really follow it that closely. I just assume they're all lying. You know my theory on that.
Well, they're pretty much, it's pretty much legalized just about everywhere anyway, right? I mean, they're just kind of doing it on a state-by-state basis.
It ain't legal in Tennessee, my man. I mean, I'm no grass expert, but it's not legal here.
Yeah, but it's
close
one of those
states
things.
That it's legal.
It's legal in what, about a dozen states now? And the more and more states that do it, eventually there's going to be pressure where they're going to have to do it because they're going to be losing so much tax revenue to the surrounding states that do have it, right?
Well, yeah, what'll happen is just like what happened with the lottery. As soon as Kentucky legalizes it, Tennessee will soon follow.
Yeah.
They'll get tired of watching tax dollars just go over the state line up there on 75.
Folks, David Britt and his team at Volunteer State Insurance Brokers have you covered for all your insurance needs. Just because you're young doesn't mean life insurance doesn't make sense. You can get life insurance for cheaper than your Netflix subscription. Call David Britt for more information. His phone number is 865-224-3243, or you can email davidbritt@volunteerstateinsurance.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back. More of your phone calls on the way. 865-546-8200. Your number to hop on the drive this afternoon. Stay with us. We're back with more right after this. Run Radio, Russell, Bear, and Dre back with you. Tanner Carson in the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios taking your phone calls today at 865-546-8200. Speaking on ESPN's Get Up program this morning, College Football Insider Laura Rutledge talked about the latest on what she's hearing about a possible return of athletes to college campuses. She's saying that early June would buy them a lot of time. Once they have a plan, they're targeting mid-July for a hopeful return for their players and some semblance of athletic activity getting ready for the season. Here's my question to you guys. We talked about this last week, the thought that in order to have college football and college football games, you really can't do that unless you're having college, right? I mean, and that stands to reason. Why would you have college football if you're not having college? If you're not having students on campus going to class and things like that, why would you have the games? But the more I think about that, I don't know. Does that really hold water? Are we really just paying lip service to a sham anyway? Could we have college? Could we let the football players go back to the dorm with no other students on campus and basically quarantine them in the dorms, feed them there, let them practice, let them go to, you know, online classes and stuff during the day and play football without crowds and have the season that way? Is that something reasonable to consider, Trey?
I mean, yeah, it's reasonable to, okay, so Tennessee opens the year up with Charlotte. It's reasonable to think that Tennessee comes out on the field and they play one of these games that without any fans. But then you look at TV contracts, and I get that. Here's the thing. You have to think about how much revenue they're losing. So the question is, Would you rather come back and play in front of an audience, in front of a crowd, later on once they figure this thing out, or do you just come back and say, okay, screw it, we're going to play, it'll be on TV, you know, we'll go about it that way. But you've got to think, too, just about the revenue loss that goes into this as well. Now, going back to what you're talking about, players coming back on campus in, you know, maybe mid-July,
without
something
students,
like that.
Without school going on, is that something that you think can have, like, is that,
I mean,
is there something that we should be against, just fundamentally having college football players on campus with the rest of the student body still held away?
No, I don't tend to go down that road, because you're going to have these players that are going to have to go to the Thornton Center. You're going to have these players that are congregating all together, and you still don't have a way with rapid testing right now to be able to figure out, you know, if the 220 people, you know, that are in the athletic complex, you know, and how they're going to go about it. If you're talking about bringing back all these players and like you said, not having other students on campus, well, where does the line get drawn of, okay, well, you're telling me these student athletes can come back on campus, but we can't? You know, it's not just about the student athletes. I mean, I'm sure a lot of these students that are at home right now, regular students,
well,
yeah,
I think the thing has to be here, Trey, is honesty. You have to be honest with yourselves. You have to be honest with the public. And you said it earlier. We're talking about a massive amount of revenue that not only benefits, you know, Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer and the people that are getting paid. It benefits the surrounding community. It benefits us. It benefits you and me to have football to talk about, because we can go out and sell advertising based on the shows that we're going to be doing, the audience numbers that we're going to be drawing in during football season. So I have no problem with being perfectly honest about that. And here's the thing. It's not as if the student body is completely missing out on the student experience. Yes, you don't get to live in the dorms and go away from home and find out about yourself and who you are, but you're still getting that educational component via these online classes. The classes are still happening. By the way, the football players are still going to have to go to those as they normally would, even if you start in July and it's still summer school. Certainly fall during the season, they're still going to have to be accountable for those classes. They're just also going to have to go to football practice and play in the games.
Well, let me put it back to you this way then. You just talked about the community. You just talked about businesses and all that good jazz. Well, what's going to give when, okay, yeah, you can come back to campus, you can play football, but maybe there's not going to be any fans there? That'll absolutely kill the local economy. It'll keep killing it. It's not going to make it any better. Just because you got a football game going on in Neyland Stadium, but then you're not allowing the 130,000 some odd people that would be outside the stadium to come around, that's not going to benefit anybody in the local economy. All that's doing is, you think these universities are giving out money to the Panera Bread on Cumberland Avenue, or you know, Gus's has been talked about a lot lately?
I don't think it's certainly not what it would be normally, but it's better than nothing, isn't it? I mean, you're talking about,
well, yeah, because I mean, you have to be able to, you know, we have to have the revenue in to keep the program healthy. I mean, if they can pull it off, you have to do it. I mean, you have to, you know.
I would rather have 20% of the boom to the local economy than 0%. We're not going to have 100%. I think that's pretty clear at this point, but I would rather have something than nothing.
Okay, so is the University of Tennessee and the SEC going to go out and pay these local establishments? I mean, you're talking about a boom. Okay, I get that. You're talking about TV. And let's also know this, okay? The University of Tennessee has insurance policies for stuff like this. So if they lose money out on people in the stands and concessions and all that good jazz, let's not sit here and act like they're not going to get the money back some way. They are, okay? But I think when we talk about, you know, bringing football back, if that's what we're doing, bringing football back for everybody, well, I don't see how that's reasonable right now to have 125,000, 130,000 people outside the stadium, 102,000 people inside the stadium as we sit right now. I don't know how that's possible. So, yes,
so if we can't have that, if we can't have
stadium,
it all, we should have nothing?
No, I'm going back to your point of how the booming economy. You know, we're talking about if we should play this thing right now without anybody there. Look what also goes into it. Donations go into this for the football program. Outside revenue, beer vendors, whatnot, and however you want to play this thing. If you want to just make the money from the SEC Network contract and ESPN, then go play it. That's fine. But if you're trying to capitalize and you're trying to bring everybody into it and make as much money as you can because your revenue is falling down because you support so many other different sports teams on campus as well, I don't think either way this is going to be losing money.
Yeah, I mean, that's perfectly obvious at this point. Go ahead, Barrett.
If they don't play football, if they have the opportunity to do it this way and they don't, because the students aren't there,
yeah,
then go ahead and get ready for there not being any university sports because, you know, without, you know, the subsidy of the football program, there's no money. And
well,
they operated at seven-figure deficits.
And I
agree with you.
Bear,
okay, Russ and Bear, I agree with you. But what makes a president here's what it is, and I'll say it this way. You're telling me Randy Boyd, president of the university, is going to have to make a declaration that, okay, it's safe for the football players to come back and the student athletes, but it's not safe for the regular students to come back to campus.
Like, yes.
This has nothing to do with the athletic directors.
Yes,
yeah,
well,
exactly,
I mean, you,
what we're
but
saying.
You can say that, Trey, because, yes, it's safer if you have 100 kids living in one dorm. That's safer than having 20,000 students on campus. Yes, that's perfectly reasonable to say.
I would agree with you, but I also think that you look at other avenues. I don't know where the line's going to be drawn because this is going not to be come up with the Southeastern Conference. This is not going to be a decision by Greg Sankey. This is going to be a decision by the president. And if he feels comfortable in saying that, Then yeah, bring it back and let's play football. But I think hard decisions are going to be made, and I think he's going to be hearing it from other people just besides athletic directors and conference commissioners.
Let's go back to the phones. Westchester is next on the drive. Good afternoon, Westchester.
Boy, guys, this is a tough one because I really think ethically, as far as the sake of the kids go, doing the right thing for the student athlete, it's really hard for me to say that it's okay to force them to be in a situation that's not safe for everybody else. You know, so that's really tough. I guess the business jerk argument of it is that they're still getting paid, they're still getting a free education for, and they're not having to do what they're getting a free education for. So, you know, if we're having classes, whether they're online or in person, and these guys are attending these classes, guys and girls are attending these classes for free, then it's hard to say that they don't have a right to, the university doesn't have a right to expect them to earn their scholarship. I mean, but, you know, that's not necessarily the right thing for the student athlete. And I can tell you, I can't speak for anybody but myself, but I can tell you there's a lot of essential workers, and we're going to hear in the fall some term of essential student, an essential employee at the university, and essential student athletes or something. I can tell you this, there's a lot of essential workers out there right now that are getting tired of the corporate greed and trying to get as much blood as they can from the turnips. I mean, it's getting old, so it's really, really, really tough for me to say that we got to force these kids to play football, and I don't see any other way to sugarcoat it. you're forcing these kids to do it, and I'm not sure that that's right. I understand the business side of it. I understand the money side of it. But
Westchester, I guarantee you that 90% of these kids with SEC scholarships want to be here this fall and are willing to take a substantial risk. You know, even the ones that might be concerned about that, these kids want to play. It's all they know. It's all they do.
You think that applies to the third string walk-on punter?
But that's the second point. You don't have to go. Like if you're just a walk-on and you don't want to be a tackling dummy, you don't have to go. Like that, nobody's holding a gun to your head. Nobody's holding a gun to your head last year when you're playing under quote-unquote perfect conditions. You don't have to do it. This is not indentured servitude, man. This is going to college.
Go ahead, Drake.
Look at the legal obligation from a liability standpoint in civil matters. I mean, you bring a kid back and that kid tests positive, and somehow some college football player around the country unfortunately comes down with this thing and passes away. Man, you're shutting the damn thing down immediately. Like it's not just about okay, bringing it back. If one player in the Big 12, SEC, Mountain West, whatever comes down with this, you'll start seeing a windfall of them shutting things down. I promise you.
I can't argue with that, Trey. Let me ask you guys a question about the whole flattening the curve thing in general. I guess what I'm not smart enough to understand, and I guess I need Dr. Bear to educate me on this, is we cut down, everyone stays at home, and it obviously cuts down on the risk of it transmitting to other people. But at some point, we think there's some safe level where we can all get back together. If I don't understand how, if that's anything besides zero, that we're not risking getting right back to where we were. Can you help me understand that?
It's difficult, and I don't think the our medical community knows for sure yet. I mean, there's a school of thought that maybe with the warmer weather that it dies out a little bit. There's a school of thought that maybe you slowly open things up back again, and you know we maybe you go back to work, but we're not handshaking. We're still social distancing. We're being just much more cautious than we were before. But I mean, you're right. I was reading a thing during one of our last breaks, and Singapore is having, you know, they had an outbreak. They cracked down hard, got rid of it, and now it's coming back again. So I mean, that is definitely the risk. And look, I don't mean to make light of any of this or pretend that football is somehow more important than saving lives. We had 2,000 people die yesterday. It's probably going to be around that again today. I mean, this is a tragic of epic proportions. But looking at the big picture, not right now, but 3 months from now, what's it going to be like? If other countries are any indication, then the curve flattens, it goes down, and we have less cases. And at some point, we have to go back to work as a society. And maybe you're right, Westchester. The worst case scenario is we just can't do that because outbreaks keep flaring up and we keep continually put people at risk. Maybe we just have to wait until a vaccine is available, whenever that is. But I think that the people who are making these decisions, the conference commissioners, the politicians, the captains of industry, they have to have a plan. I mean, you have to have a plan to try and get things back, even if you don't have – even if it doesn't work, even if we can't go back and play baseball next month like they're trying to do, you have to have a plan for it, and you have to have a backup plan to the backup plan and so on. And it doesn't hurt to look at the different possibilities. So,
Russ, do you agree with Trey that it comes down to the university presidents making that decision?
Yes and no. I mean, I think when it comes to here's the thing about the university presidents, Randy Boyd is kind of the exception, and he's a sports guy. Most of these guys are like Joe DiPietro was. These are eggheads, right? These are academic types. They don't know the first thing about the sports world, and a lot of those guys will defer to the conference to make these decisions. And Greg Sankey's, he's a smart guy, man. He's not going to put people out there if he thinks the risk is just overwhelming. So I think they're still, they don't know what they're going to do, man. They're still gathering information, but I think it is up to the presidents, yes, but I think a lot of those people just kind of defer their vote in these matters to the conference. That's why the conference
right.
exists.
But it's got to be all or nothing, right? It's got to be everybody or nobody, right?
Yeah, I mean, you might have to convince a couple of people and, you know, kind of go bring them along, but it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if there's like one or two presidents that are just adamantly opposed to playing football. Could they be forced by the other 12 league schools to just go along with it? I'm not really sure how that would work.
And that gets into Trey's liability issue. But, guys, I won't take up any more of your time. You guys have a good show. Thanks.
Thank you, Westchester. Appreciate the phone call. We take a quick timeout. You're listening to The Drive. We'll be back to wrap up hour number two right after this. Sports Illustrated has posted a story where he speaks with several Power 5 Conference college football athletics directors and how they are grappling with the uncertain financial future of King football. And after he posted his story, he said he got a phone call from another Power 5 Conference athletics director who I guess he did not interview for the original story, who called to share three contingency plans that his department is exploring as it relates to football and budget. Option number one, you have football as usual with a 20% reduction in revenue. I guess he's just thinking, you know, people that have lost so much money this summer will not be able to afford their entertainment dollars. So he's budgeting a 20% reduction in revenue. Option number two, football with no fans. That would be a 35% reduction in revenue. I don't know where they're getting these numbers, but okay. And then option three would be no football with bleep. It just says because I guess that is a scenario they do not even want to contemplate. So I find it hard to believe, and I guess it depends on the school and the size of your stadium and, you know, what you traditionally draw from revenues, but I find it hard to believe that college football with no fans would equal a mere 35% reduction in revenue. I feel like that would be a much higher number. No?
Are they taking into account, you know, the loss of revenue from concessions, parking, ticket sales, program sales, everything that gets sold?
I think you would have to be, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, you would think they would. But the big thing to me is that they've got, if there's any way they can generate revenue, I don't see how they can not try and make it happen. If they can do it safely, simply because of what all major college football pays for. And it's not just sports. You know, a lot of these athletic departments of these universities give money back over to the educational side. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough question. So,
yeah, it is. It's going to be difficult. If you get school going back open, they're going to have to. Answer this question first is and hopefully the virus miraculously disappears and we can go back to school in July. I don't think that's going to happen. What they're going to have to do, one of the first questions they're going to have to answer, guys, is are we prepared to bring the football players and basketball players back and let them live on campus, work out and practice as close to normal as possible with, you know, stricter social distancing on campus and all that stuff. But are we willing to do that and let them be on campus without the rest of the student body? And I guess where I'm at is, and I've kind of changed I've kind of evolved on this one. I've come around on that one to a yes. If you can do it safely, you can figure it out. Yeah, I think you should do it.
Yeah, probably. I'm kind of in that boat with you. But if you can, then it would.
And it sucks, and it's giving it's giving more credence to the you know football. This is not amateur sport; it's a business. But we already know that anyway. So what's the problem with just saying it out loud?
There's not. It's people still wanting to delude themselves into thinking that it's not, but it is. You know.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what they do. It seems like the winds are changing each and every day. I'll tell you what though. One other college football thought for you to wrap up hour number two of the show. We got another hour coming your way right here on Fan Run Radio. Got to reset the hot question that carried us in hour number one to some decent conversation and phone calls. If I'm Philip Fulmer and I'm looking at all this that's going on, I know they want to play a full 12-game schedule because it's money, 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 money. If I'm Philip Fulmer and there are all these different options are on the table, I'm pushing for a conference-only schedule. Let's just play eight games. No open dates. Let's play 2 months. Let's play in September and October and see if we can get 2 months, a conference schedule in. We'll crown a conference champion. Let's do that. And here's an added benefit to that, Bear, aside from the health component of it.
What's that, Russell?
It allows us to escape the indignity of losing at Oklahoma again with honor.
Ah, that's a good point, as Dewey Warren would say, Ruff. That is. That's a really good point.
We can get out of that without looking like a bunch of cowards. We can just can't. Oh, well, sorry. Yeah, we're not going to reschedule this game. It's one of those things. It was an act of God.
Well, they call it force majeure.
I don't know. I just call it an act of God. That's good to do it. Hour number two in the books. We were talking about Cal Ripken Jr., the 25th anniversary of his record-breaking game. He broke the Lou Gehrig consecutive game streak. They showed that game on ESPN last night. It was a nice little trip down memory lane, and we were going through some other iconic, record-breaking sports moments. We'll hit the reset button on that. We'll get some interesting ones on the Twitter sphere this afternoon. Top 5 at 5 on the way as well. Stay tuned. The drive continues on Fan Run Radio.